David Pettenmore is a pollination scientist at Plant and Food Research. Now, we've heard a lot about the demise of honeybees and bumblebees. So tell us about your research and what you're trying to do to help.
Right, so what we're trying to do is actually develop alternative pollination systems for growers in New Zealand. And that's largely because of the threats that are facing honeybees. The biggest problem for growers is it means that honeybees get more expensive. So they have to pay hundreds of dollars per each hive to put it in their crop. They want 8 hives per hectare. That's a lot of money. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to develop alternative systems. And one of the big things that we're doing is trying to turn bumblebees into a system that growers can manage in their orchards. So currently, if you want bumblebees in an orchard, you have to pay over $100 for a cardboard box like this. And I'll just open this up carefully. Carefully. In here, there's probably about 100 bumblebees in a small colony. I'll turn the microphone on, you can hear it. If I whack it, they'll start coming out.
No, don't do that.
All right, so this is what growers have, the option they have at the moment if they want bumblebees. But these really are designed for glasshouse tomato pollination.
Now, when you say 100, because if that were a box of that size with mm-hmm. honeybees in, you'd have 100,000 in something of that size, wouldn't you? So do bumblebees live in smaller groups than honeybees?
They definitely live in smaller groups. So that's one of the big limitations. If you're just wanting numbers of bees, get yourself a honeybee hive with 60,000 bees. This is only, you know, maybe 100 to 200. This works well in glasshouses for tomato pollination, but when you put it out in the field, they often really struggle to figure out how to get outside the box to start with, and that they're actually meant to forage. So what we find, and it's just simply too expensive. If you've only got a couple hundred bees in a box like this, why not just buy a honeybee hive?
So they need to learn to think outside the box, is what you're saying.
There we go. That's so why you're paid for the joke.
So it's a problem of scale. If you've only got 200 mm-hmm. bees and you've got 200,000 plants, and you had 200,000 honeybees, they would have no problem with one bee per plant on average. So the bumblebees, why can't you just have more bumblebees then?
Well, actually, bumblebees have one thing in their advantage. So some of the study, especially with kiwifruit, have found that one of these bumblebee workers does the job of 50 honeybee workers. So that starts to even it out a little bit more. But you still need a whole lot of these, and these are simply too expensive. So what we're trying to do is develop ways that growers can harness the power of wild bumblebees. Because there's bumblebees out there in the environment anyway. The key thing for the grower is that they like to count things. If they can't actually count and say, I have 10 colonies of bumblebees, they won't change their management at all. They'll just bring in the same amount of honeybees. So we want to give them a way to find out how many bumblebee colonies they have in their orchard and then give them tools to manage those colonies. So what we've developed up on your screen there is a picture of our bumblebee bunker, and that's our Mark 2.0. It looks kind of like a popcorn, you know, the Rice Krispie slice.
It looks like a breeze block.
Yeah, a breeze block, something like that.
Have you got a designer on board, or is that?
Yeah, we...
Clearly.
I think we haven't got a designer on board, and that's part of the problem. This is actually like a flat-pack construction style, because we've expanded to a massive trial. We've got a thousand of these nest boxes going all in throughout the country. We've got 5 regions in New Zealand, ranging from sort of coastal avocado orchards to high country red clover stations in Marlborough. And we're putting these in the ground. And the idea is that we want to build the best nest box that attracts queen bumblebees. So bumblebees, rather than honeybees that they continue year round, bumblebees have an annual cycle. And only the queens survive over winter. So those queens hibernate in the ground and they come out in spring and they're looking for a new nest site. So we want to build something that just to them is just perfect. This is where they want to set up a new colony. So we've been trialing it for 2 years now. We've had great success, which enables us to expand to this new trial.
So this is like the Bee Ideal Home exhibition, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
So how do you decide whether the bees like the home you've made for them or not? What do you measure?
We measure whether they turn up for a start. So it's interesting. The simplest measure that most people around the world use is occupancy. Did you ever see a bumblebee or a sign of a bumblebee or think that there may be a bumblebee inside this box? And globally around the world, when they do these trials, you get about 3% success rate. You're going to have to put out, 300 of these to get just a few colonies in your orchard, which really doesn't work. New Zealand has this reputation for doing really well with these artificial nests. And so far, overall, with our trial, we get about 30% occupancy. Some orchards up to 60% occupancy. So that's pretty dang good.
Could you boost that by putting some kind of smell or chemical in there that
Absolutely.
Might lure the queen in?
Yeah, we've tried that. A lot of the lures have been sort of based on floral scents. they're not looking for flowers when they're looking for nest sites, so that doesn't really work. But we're trying to sort of distill an essence of disturbed earth, you know,
carpet,
like that.
Maybe like Cavalier Bremworth, I'm thinking, you know, like a nice tight fold sort of
a little kitchen sink. You
yeah,
know,
yeah, I don't
well,
know.
We actually have
maybe.
Used
B-day, yeah.
We've used carpet underlay, and that works pretty well. But that's the fibre. So the thing is, bees actually find it really easy to find our nest sites. And the key thing for us is understanding what is that trigger that when a bee comes into our nest site, what makes it think, ah, this is a place I want to stay, rather than just going back out again. So one of the other things that we've been doing, especially because there's one bee species, bumblebee species, we've had a lot of difficulty getting, is that we're putting little radio transmitters, and there's another picture here, on the back of these bumblebee queens. So we're actually able to track them as they're searching for their nest sites. And we actually get at a very early stage, we get a picture of where these bees are choosing to nest. And this picture is from, we've got a master's student from Massey University who's doing this study. She was up in the Netherlands, and she's just come back to New Zealand. She's doing it again in New Zealand, actually chasing these bees across the landscape.
Does she use GBS?
No, this is... No. Just these radio transmitters.
Is that ethically... I mean, that's not fair.
Yes.
I mean, that's like me having a rat's tail 9 metres long.
It is. I mean, what we're seeing here is a bumblebee with a tail, and I presume that's the antenna, isn't it? That thing that's streaming off the back.
And you can
back.
See the little package
and
here.
And it's about three times longer than the bee is. Does it impair the bee when it flies?
Occasionally it gets caught up in the flowers, but it doesn't seem to bother them too much. More the problem is it gets caught up and then it gets ripped off and then we lose the bee.
What about the weight of the little transmitter thing, though?
So the weight's about a quarter of the body weight.
Wow. Hold on.
But you've got to take into account...
It's the size of a grain of rice, isn't it? The little thing you've got stuck on there.
These bees will easily carry their own body weight in pollen and nectar. So I brought along a backpack that's a quarter of my body weight, but that's blinking difficult to carry. But for the bees, they're used to carrying these sort of weights. The interesting thing, when we first put a transmitter on the bee, and I was quite nervous about this method, it was blowing 30 knots at our research centre, and I thought, well, I can't release a bee into the wild. I took it up to our orchard where we have sort of good protection from the wind, and I go up there and I release this queen, and she goes straight up over the top of the protection into the wind and disappears. Never saw her again. So they certainly have no problem flying with this. We do need to make sure they're in good condition. They get a good feed of nectar before we release them, but they fly with no problem.
And is it working? Do you think this is going to be a viable strategy?
It certainly is. It gives us a level of information that we're not able to achieve in any other way. So you can find colonies at the late end of the season when there's lots of workers coming in and out, but it's almost impossible to find these early stage nests. So by putting these when they first got a nest, we can actually build up a picture of what is that nest site when those queens first say, this is where I want to set up colony. We can figure it out, and we can take those elements, build them into our bumblebee bunker design, and hopefully improve the success rate.
David Pattymore on his efforts to improve the efficiency of New Zealand's bumblebees.